Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Good evening, everyone. Yes, indeed. As they say, let's get started. Well, we are going to go two parts on this episode here. Preston Dennett and Dolly Safran are in the house. And we are going to be talking about all things outerworldly, as well as Preston and Dolly's new book, Symmetry. And so without further ado, I better get started, because we are going to be splitting this segment. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, grab somebody next to you, and here we go.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
Well, hello, Preston and Dolly, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you, Kelly. Hey.
Thank you, Kelly.
No problem. Now, for my viewers and my listeners, this is going to be my very first episode where I have actually two people on, and then I'm going to be increasing that in the next few weeks here to three people on. So let's see if we can, they're a good testing ground here. So you poor souls. So what we're going to talk about today is the book that Dolly and Preston, I assume, wrote together called Symmetry. But before we get to talking a little bit about that book, I really like to start out with a foundation on each individual, because most of us would like to know where all our humble beginnings began. So maybe we should start with Preston, if you wouldn't mind telling everyone a little bit about where this interest grew from you and where you think this all began back in your day.
Yeah, thanks, Kelly. It began quite some time ago. I've been in this field for over 35 years now. So I was pretty young. I was actually, 21 years old, a complete skeptic on all things UFO or paranormal. When on November 17, 1986, I heard a report on the news about a sighting over Alaska. It's a very well-publicized sighting, very well-known in the UFO community. And I just didn't believe the pilot who reported this. Of course, it wasn't just him. It was this whole crew. It was on radar, ground radar, other witnesses. The whole news report was very tongue-in-cheek, very jokey, very brief. But it interested me enough to start thinking about this subject. And I recalled my brother Mark said he'd seen a UFO. So finally, I was ready to listen to him. And he told an incredible story. He was the one who really kind of broke the ice for me. He had an incredible sighting with his two friends. Mm-hmm. And I started asking other people in the family. And I found out my sister-in-law had a very close-up sighting with two friends. And later, a face-to-face encounter with what we now know are grays. Yeah. back then, she certainly had never heard of grays. But yeah, I found out I had another sister-in-law who'd had encounters. I started asking friends. I had a friend who had missing time, another friend, a pilot and a scuba diver, a good witness. She had a very close-up sighting. And it just kind of snowballed from there. Stupidly, I brought it up at work. I found out my coworker who I'd sat next to for a long time says, oh yeah, me and my whole family saw one. It turned out her daughter was having abductions, contacts with gray ETs. And in walks Dorothy, who's very unfiltered. I just love her. And she's like, oh yeah, UFO followed me and my best friend and my mom home. She's like, Preston, it's so weird. We live 5 minutes from the library. I know it was exactly 9 o'clock and we didn't get home till 10:15.
Yeah.
So, that's how I got involved in this field. I became a field investigator for MUFON, the Mutual UFO Network. I bought every darn journal, magazine I could find. I joined every UFO group. I started going to conventions, going out in the field looking for UFOs. I mean, I just could not let this go and eventually started writing articles. I was in this field for 10 years before I wrote my first book. That was in 1996, UFO Healings. And haven't looked back. I've now got 29 books, more than 100 articles.
Yeah. Preston and I have talked before, just for those of you who are watching us for the very first time and those of you who are listening to us. Preston, correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been a while since I've had you on, but I feel like it was yesterday, actually. Do I remember this right? Did you visually see a craft in one of the valleys that you lived near or you went to, and you actually saw one visually? Help me out on that.
Yes, that's absolutely true. It was about, I really started digging in 1988. It was 1992, which was a big year for me. I saw a little orb, it came down. I think I had missing time. Had a number of sightings that year, one very close up. It's been like a dozen, probably a little more than that by this point.
Am I allowed to tell people where you saw this, or do you mind giving us a general idea as to where you saw this? Because, when people give reports and stuff, they start thinking, oh my gosh, is this happening in my state? Can I ask what state that was in?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this was in Southern California. The first was July 1992 in Woodland Hills.
Yeah.
Then in Canoga Park. That's where I've had most of my sightings. Topanga Canyon. Pretty much all around the San Fernando Valley area, right outside of Los Angeles.
Really fascinating stuff. And yes, a lot of books later, I'll tell you. And this one, I think... a bestseller or a near bestseller? I can't remember which the Symmetry. Which one does this hit at?
Yeah, it hit number one
on
Amazon under the UFO genre.
Good.
Yeah, number one. Super happy.
Yeah, no, really good. I mean, you've worked really hard to bring a lot of this stuff to the forefront. And Preston and I have talked before even about my own personal experiences. And sometimes... I still don't know to this day how to solve some of those mysteries. But again, you've been a great help in my life. And Dolly, let's move this now to you, because I want to find out a little bit more about where this all began for you. And then right after that, I think we're going to kind of go into talking about your book, Symmetry. So take it away, Dolly, from here.
Okay, well, I am... generational contactee. I became fully conscious at about the age of 14. But before that, I knew something was happening to me. I had a good idea what it was. I just couldn't connect to it completely. At a very young age, I also displayed a psychic ability. I went missing a few times that drove my parents crazy. One time they had to call the police. They found me 6 miles from home in a totem. It's like a little, quickie mart, and I was really upset. I was only 2 years old, so I couldn't really say to them what had happened to me. They knew that somebody had to have brought me there because my feet weren't dirty. I only had underwear on.
Yeah.
I'm telekinetic. I can levitate. I have levitated. I can astral project, you know, OBE. I can remote view, stuff like that. When I was about 5 years old, I met, physically met my contact. Her name, I was laying in my front yard just looking up at the sky, and I saw this huge umbrella. And I thought, what? And I had just seen Mary Poppins, and I think they were covering my eyesight to keep me from being afraid. And I saw it coming down. It was slightly rotating, and I knew it couldn't be Mary Poppins because it had a hook on it, but not the parrot. That was glaringly missing. And I was fascinated by it, though. And the next thing I know, I'm on board this craft, and I'm sitting next to a woman who put me up on her lap and gave me a hug and said, you can call me Mama. I'm related to you, and I'm going to help take care of you when you're with us. I was like, okay. And No kidding. And I was fascinated by her.
And how old were you again, Dolly, at the same?
I was almost six. So I was about 5 and a half, 6 years old. That's my first actual contact memory.
What did this woman look like?
She's a tall gray. She's about 6'2". And she's beautiful blue-green eyes. And just very elegant, very, you know, graceful woman. She has a thing she wears. Sometimes the tall grays, like affectations, and she has a thing for human gingham dresses, and she used to wear gingham dresses all the time. She made them herself, which I found fantastic. Had big pockets in them.
Mm-hmm.
And, I met the ship, the entity that indwells the craft. All their craft are indwelled by a fifth dimensional non-corporeal entity, and the ship itself is biological. It's somewhat alive, especially with the entity indwelling it. It's a symbiotic relationship between the craft and the entity.
Yeah.
And everything they do is interdimensional, and this being becomes the ship, like we indwell our body. And I can't pronounce his full name. I never could, and I pronounce just a little part of it, and it's Talara. Mm-hmm. And I've known him my whole life as well. I thought I was going crazy by the time I hit 14, and my mother wasn't helping me out with that. She didn't like the subject, and I freaked her out most of my life. And I went on a campaign with myself. I'm going to figure this out. And so one night I was out doing my astronomy homework because I took astronomy lessons, and I had my scope up. And my dad's 1 o'clock in the morning. He said, go to bed. It's a school night, you know. So I went to bed and got my jammies on. And I don't sleep much. I sleep 2 hours a night. And I was looking up at the sky all night because Orion was up. That's my favorite constellation. And I started to see many, many stars that didn't belong there. And I'm counting them, and it's like 100 of them. They paired off. They went east, west, north, and south. Two of them came down over where we lived in the Everglades. One went east toward Kendall, near Dadeland Mall, and the other one came down over where we lived. And I'm watching this thing, and I'm thinking, okay, this is my chance, now or never. I'm going to remember, you know? And I watched the change of colors, and then all of a sudden I saw the trees swaying wildly as it came down over the trees in my yard. And I'm looking at this craft. It's metallic, and it's pretty bloody, you know. Back then I thought that was big. It's not that big to me now.
Mm-hmm.
And I got up to the ports, you know, they're like not quite oblong, they're like rectangular sideways like this.
Mm-hmm.
And each one of the ports was a being, and he was looking dead at me. And I freaked. I was like, oh, no. That was it. That was enough to convince me to turn around, and I was going to go under my bed. And I never made it. The room exploded in blue white light. And my memory goes, whoop, cuts off. And I wake up on the floor hours later wearing someone else's jammies inside out and backwards. And I was mad. I was just incredibly mad that that happened again. And I was considering, well, maybe I am nuts. You know, maybe there's something wrong with me. And then I realized, wait a minute, whose jammies are these? Okay. And I thought, oh, my God, you know, this. And I had this huge urge to go tell my mother. And so I got dressed for school, you know, showered up, went in the kitchen. She's cooking breakfast. And she says, like, make coffee. She's listening to the radio. And I sat down and I'm thinking, how the hell do I tell this woman who hates anything like this what happened? And I asked her questions. I said, Mom, have you seen anything last night? You guys hear anything? Lights, weird wind, anything? And she goes, what are you talking about? And I said, you know, UFOs. And she whirled on me, stuck a finger in my face and said, nope. Nope. And that meant nothing.
Okay. Dolly, I have a question.
Okay.
Okay, so you're describing something that I'm kind of familiar with on my end and experienced as well. But the one thing that just hit me, and maybe you can elaborate on this a little bit more. So you said you woke up in somebody else's pajamas, right? Did you keep them on? And when you walked out to your mother, by chance said, no. Whose pajamas are these? Or did you take them off and were they still existent or did they dissolve and just disappear?
I put them in a bag and rolled the bag up and I took a shower and got clean. I felt very funky, you know, and I had to get ready for school. So in my mind, it was get ready for school. I'm from a military family and you don't walk out in the kitchen gross ever. So I got cleaned up.
Interesting. So what did you do with that pajamas since then?
I had them for a long time. This is way back in 1973. I had them forever and ever and ever. But my life has been very, you don't talk, you don't tell,
right.
You don't say anything to anybody.
Right.
And over the years, I've just lost track of them. I don't know where they are. You know, at one point I did throw them in the garbage, but then I retrieved them thinking, no, keep them. But I've lost them since.
Yeah. Back in those days, I probably grew up in the same kind of era, maybe you too, Preston. You just didn't, you just didn't go there. You know, it just, you just keep, or it's your imagination, or you're making this stuff up, you just want attention or something like that. Or you've been watching too much sci-fi on TV and, you know, I mean, it could go all kinds of places. So that's very interesting. And that's also kind of scary. Now, the only thing that I do want to backtrack just a hair here, and I want to go back to the craft. You know, when you're 6 years old, you're pretty, you can kind of remember things now. You know, it's not like you're three or two and people have spotty memories back at that age. But when you're six, that's an age you can remember stuff at. So how did you ever, so you're up in this craft, you're sitting on this person's lap, and then so how do you recall getting back into bed or your memory of getting back into bed or back home?
They were wiping my memory still at that point. They didn't want me to have full conscious recall yet. It was a deliberate act on their part to keep me in the dark about it. Yeah. They let me remember just enough to keep me going with it and to seek what I needed to see. I was also being taken to another planet to learn. While I was with them, they would take me for days and then bring me back. And they were holding me in away from it. In other words, they were letting me grow up, live my life while this was going on. I had the feeling that they knew I would eventually strive to wake up. I'm too psychic not to, because I would dream about things that I hadn't remembered, but I was having dreams very young. And my mother kept saying, that's how she associated it with dreams. And she would just tell me, you know, don't worry about it. You know, you just got a wild imagination. You know, my mom was livid about it. But you got to remember, too, my father worked for NASA. My father was in the military. Okay. And I knew things. And so I have all these things playing in my head throughout my entire life. I also was had uncles who flew. And just my life was very, very different. I was isolated. My father knew that the whole house knew that I had abilities. I scared him all the time.
Yeah.
He actually took me, a buddy of his in the military said, if you want to test her psychically, take her to the base. They got a program. My father had no idea what he was walking into. When I got there, you know, they tested me and I scared everybody there. I mean, I was doing stuff they couldn't believe I could do. And they asked that I would spend the night. They wanted to test me, you know, put electrodes on my head and all that. And my dad grudgingly said, okay, signed paperwork, you know. And a friend of his who was a general heard about what was going on and said, get her out now. And he wrote an order. My dad was an airborne ranger. You do not stop a ranger from anything, ever. He went in there with that order and he ordered me out and they let me go with him. I'm still glad because it was an MK Ultra program and nobody would have ever seen me again.
Oh,
they
my.
They tried to abduct me twice in my lifetime and when I was young. And yeah. So yeah, when I say I had weird going on my entire life, I really did. I just couldn't hold it together in a ball in my head and say, this is what it is. It was just so jumbled up for me. And that's why I became so extremely insistent on remembering. I mean, it was that or I was completely wacko. And it was one or the other. I mean, it was like, you're going to know now. I mean, I was so determined. I was not afraid of what I would find out. I knew something was happening. I knew what I could do, you know, mentally. And so I went for it. That's what happened.
So my question now to you would be this. Okay, so give me an age range as to when all of this started to kind of escalate a little bit more. What was your age at that point?
It escalated on a roller coaster. In other words, the very first memory I have is I'm 10 months old and I was in my crib. I was supposed to be napping and I could walk and talk by the time I was 10 months old, by the way. And I saw this bright light in the window. We had just moved to Miami. We were living in a high-rise apartment on right at Bayfront, okay? And I started levitating in the bed. I started rising up. And by the time I made it to the top rail, it freaked me completely out. And I tried to flip over. I was trying to pull myself down. That is my absolute first memory of anything. It was so traumatic, I never forgot it. I mean, it's imprinted in my memory like you wouldn't believe. I even remember feeling like it was going to happen again. And I used to stick my legs through the bars on the crib to hold on because I was afraid it would happen again. The next thing that happened was I was 2.5. We had moved to another place. We were down in Westwood Lakes in Miami. And I remember somebody coming into the room with me. It was, again, that time my mother's heavily pregnant with my brother. And they took me out. Now, I know they're not normal, okay? These are not normal people picking me up. That much I remember. Have a murky image of at that point. That's when I ended up in the totem 6 miles from the house. They actually called the police. They put my mother in a police car while they were looking for me. I was gone for 2.5 hours. Nobody knew where I was. And when they found me, the police got my mother to the totem to pick, you know, come and grab me. I was pissed off at everybody because they told me I was going to get a red balloon. And I didn't get one, and I was really mad about it. And that's why that one stuck in my head. I vividly remember that. I just don't remember how they dropped me off, except that I suddenly came out of something and behind this building. Miami, back in those days, there was hardly any, you know, a spot. It was behind you, totem, in like a field, you know?
Yeah.
Like, and they said, walk in, go around and walk in. The door was too damn big for me to push open. I had to knock on it. And the guy was like looking at me thinking, you know, where is your mama, you know? And he opened the door, and I'm like, help me, I want my balloon. And it went from there.
Interesting. Preston, jump in here. Thank you, Dolly. Thank you. We're going to get back to you in a moment.
Okay.
This is you're as you can see in my face, I'm going. I was just telling a guest the other day on the show that when you start seeing me go in like deer in headlights mode, all of a sudden I'm visualizing your situation. I can see it. I'm kind of a visionary in a way, but I'm just like, okay, snap out of it, you know. So, Preston. What are your thoughts about all this? Jump on in here.
What Dolly's talking about is very familiar to me. I would say the vast majority of contactees, almost without exception, have contact from a very early age. 5 years old is pretty common. I think it probably starts beforehand. And many do remember all the way down to, you know, 2 years, 1 year. Science says, oh, people can't remember that far back. They're wrong. I have enough cases where I know people can remember all the way down, not only to, you know, a year old or less, even to pre-birth, to past lives.
Oh, my.
So, and Dolly does have past life memories. Many contactees do. And what often happens to a contactee is they will have sort of an inciting incident, so to speak, where it's just too much for this not to be real. And they often go through life, sometimes all the way to adulthood, suppressing this, explaining it away, refusing to think about it, thinking they're crazy. until some incident happens where they come back and they're locked out of the house, yeah, or they're wearing someone else's clothes, or someone says, you know, I just saw you getting, you know, dropped out of a, you know, something that has some level of proof to it. And often that does happen when someone's perhaps an adult, a young adult. Whitley Strieber is a good example. He was, you know, married with kids by the time he finally figured out what was going on. Dolly's case is a little different. And she remembered at age 14, and that's when she had regular full conscious contact. And I've interviewed a lot of people, and there is a small minority of people who do have what I call full conscious contact. Mm-hmm. They have overcome the memory blocks that often surround this, and in some cases overcome the fear too. But I have to tell you, it's just a handful out of the hundreds of people I've interviewed. And as I got to know Dolly, and she really started sharing her story and opening up, because that was a bit of a process in and of itself. It took a year or two before I realized, oh my goodness, her story is the most extensive I have ever heard.
Yeah.
Because I have heard people being taken on board to, you know, see the moon, perhaps, or planet Saturn, or learning how to fly the craft, or going on to mother ships. Only a few describe being taken to other planets. Very few have overcome their fear, have overcome the memory blocks, and have the full-on relationship that Dolly has been able to develop with these guys.
I just talked with a gentleman who's a guest on my show. In fact, Dolly, if you continue to look down on the Facebook that we were talking about earlier, you'll scroll all the way down and you're going to start seeing some of the other ads, you know, like what you'll be on. And he's a spiritual healer. But he had also an experience, such as what you're describing, Preston. And he said he was brought up and he could actually, they showed him the backside of the moon, something like that. And so I think we talked very briefly about, well, what did you see and what did they show you and all that. But he was just recently, you know, within the last month on the show. But you know, Dolly, did you see the backside of the moon? And if you did, what did you see there?
When I was 14 and I finally remembered what had happened to me, part of that trip included first Saturn. We went to Saturn. I got an astronomy lesson. I actually flew that day. He let me. He gave me a wand to hold on to. It's psychic. And he connected with me that way. Mm-hmm. And gave me coordinates, gave me a briefing on how to go. We went to Saturn, and it was very cool. And then we went to the moon, which is my favorite place, period. I love the moon. And we did 8 revolutions around it, almost in the spirograph pattern, you know? Mm-hmm. And we low-rode over it. We were about 200-300 feet above the surface. And I did see everything, all of it. Yes, there is a base there. I saw artifacts from previous times that they were there that were just, you know, beyond repair, and they were turned to relic. And then I got to see, you know, what the limb is on the moon, right? I got to see the base of the limb.
Yeah.
Not the limb, because the limb goes back to the craft. But I saw that, and I saw the flag, and I saw the rover, you know. I got to see the different topographies of the moon. I got to understand, you know, the different types of soil they have, rocks and why it's all like it is. And, but yeah, I did see it. It's not what you think. The moon is not hollow, like a lot of people forward. It's not hollow at all. It is a real moon. It has gravity as a magnetic core. Okay. That's how come they're able to stand up and walk around. All right. It is a dusty place. And the reason that they aren't odd, like it's not a huge base, is the moon is not totally protected from gamma radiation like we are. We have a magnetosphere, okay? So they have a small contingent. And when I say small, I mean small. There's probably less than 100 of them on the moon at any given time. Very small.
Let me jump in here. Okay. Get that echo out of there. I have a question for you. Okay. So there's always reports of individuals who have had some kind of contact maybe with a craft or have gotten too close to it, et cetera, et cetera. And then they find out that the radiation or whatever is being emitted off of, even where it might have landed, or if they touch something or whatever, has a tendency to cause cancer or the demise of the person. So here you are up in this craft, and you're actually sitting in the lap of this being, you know, and that must have felt a little odd, but I mean, you know, just the skin contact. Did you not develop anything serious from being near that craft or within that craft?
My only issues with it are what they put up with, and that is I'm losing the hair on my body. I'm going hairless. I have very little hair on my head now. And that's because the electrostatic energy that's all around you all the time, it's like having electrolysis. That's why the grays have no hair anywhere. I have some background radiation from time to time. I'm a little bit more radioactive than others. It's just because of space-time, being out in space, the gamma coming in, there's no way to stop it. It absolutely goes through everything, and it messes with you, and I accumulate it from time to time. One time it was so bad, I went into a bowling alley, and I lit up. It was creepy.
You mean kind of like Cosmos, or what do they call it, cosmic bowling at midnight, where
yes,
they're like, cool, I love this.
And I lit right up, yeah. It freaked me out. I sent pictures of it to Preston. Those are hazards of being in space. What the people are getting when they go, if they accidentally touch, Travis Walton's a good case. He accidentally touched a hot craft. And oh, yes, ma'am, that's a plasma burn. And it electrocuted him at the same time.
Yeah.
When he says he died, he's not joking around. He probably did. Mm-hmm. They helped him. They brought him back. They healed him. They did what they needed. They will not suffer you to be injured by anything. And so they're very careful. When they fly, they don't come in hot. They come in cold. In other words, they go from their usual power source down to batteries, and they cool off in the atmosphere before they come down, and they release all of that. You know what angel hair is?
Yeah.
That's a reaction to the craft cooling down, and it changes molecules in the air around it, and it makes that weird spidery stuff, angel hair. But it's releasing the radioactivity off the craft. At that point, they still don't want you to touch it, though, because it is still dangerous. When the space shuttle comes down, you know how dangerous that is to touch that, to go near it, and for any reason whatsoever? It's accumulated great amounts of gamma radiation. It is a dangerous vehicle, and they have to cool off for hours after landing. They can't come right out. That's one of the reasons they wanted them to drop into the ocean in the first place.
Right.
Okay, so, you know, so yeah, it's a dangerous thing, and I accepted the responsibility of that. When I was young, they were very, very careful with me. They did not let me get affected by it at all. When I became an adult, I could make up my mind about things, and I chose to be with them more and fly. That's when I started taking on radiation. It's possible that one of the things that had happened to me is I developed thyroid cancer. But I'm okay. It's okay. No problem. It's gone. You know?
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Well, I have a question for you. Preston, you can jump in after this too. I sought out Preston, you know, a while ago, and I had him on my first show, my podcast show, which we did a triple header. My God, it was great. I mean, wonderful response. And I think one of the questions that I asked Preston, and I'm going to just throw this at you too. I can't remember. Did you say you have some kind of psychic ability?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to toss my story at you too. Preston, you'll probably remember it after I start relaying it to you. And I want to see if you get any kind of psychic impression from it, because I've been talking about this on my shows quite a bit, actually. I just brought it up again the other day. I have a picture of it in my book. So I'm going to give you and tell you what has happened, and I want to see if you get any psychic impression because of it, because I've kind of let it go a little bit, but yet I'm not really. So And one night I was going to bed and I smelled this really obnoxious, kind of that rose water smell, petal smell from back in the day. And people are like, oh, you know, you go into a Victorian shop and it's kind of something along that lines. And I thought it was my husband's shampoo. And so I, it was just overwhelming. It was really horrid. And so I was just laying there and I thought, God, tomorrow I'm going to tell him to ditch the shampoo because it was yuck, you know? And so, but in the morning when I woke up, I went to the bathroom, and as I was standing there looking in the mirror, I was horrified because, let's see, I can show you right here, but upside down was a blood red handprint, very kind of purplish red on my body, elongated fingers. This second one here, though, was crooked. Okay. And so I thought, oh my God, where did that come from? I've never had a handprint on me before. So I went and, of course, showed my husband. And, of course, he was horrified because he was like, I didn't do that. And I knew it wasn't my hand because I don't know, it was upside down, and I started to evaluate it and really look at it carefully. It was the crooked finger that got me, though, and the elongated fingers, unless it was scratching down like that. Anyway, long story short, it took 3 hours to disappear, and it just suddenly just kind of, it's not like it was getting fainter and fainter. It was just at one point when I wasn't paying much attention, it just kind of disappeared. Okay, so I had been a little paranoid about that ever since, but are you aware of people that get handprints on their bodies, kind of elongated fingers, purplish, reddish, that sit there for a couple hours and then they just kind of go away? What are your thoughts about that?
That would not be ET. That would either be, you're psychic. You know that, right?
Yeah, I do.
Okay. You also have seen many, many things in your lifetime that you look confused about. Okay.
Yeah.
You were under, it's not, I wouldn't call it an attack, but it is, sometimes there are entities that your energy is very bright. Your aura, by the way, is extremely lavender colored. Okay.
I know. Lavender
aura, okay. And it attracts them, you know, negative influences or, you know, entities that I wouldn't want around me. Mm-hmm. And they can become physical at times. They can impress you physically. And I'm pretty positive that's what you had happen to you. You had something touch you.
Yeah.
And it wanted to hang out with you and it spent the night with you. And that acrid, horrible, rosy smell is exactly how they come in. So.
Yeah, it was obnoxious. And it was nauseating to the point where I put my covers over my nose, by the way.
Yeah.
And as some people would say, and I brought this up on my show with another guest the other day, some people would say, oh, that must have been your grandmother because of that rosy smell. And
no, absolutely
I know.
No.
I know. Yeah. That's what I was saying. And so when I reached out to Preston with this very same scenario, I'm like, can you help me figure out who the heck touched me? Because there's people right now that are having a hard time categorizing. Oh, is it spiritual? Is it paranormal? I like to break it down further and put extraterrestrial in there. And then I would say within a couple weeks after that, I had a dream. And I thought it was my husband's like cousin or, you know, young gal. And she was facing the other direction. And then it turned around and it was a mantis being face that had a COVID mask, dark COVID mask over its face, but very mantis like eyes and kind of the shape. And I put that in my book too, just as an illustration, but that scared me so much that I woke up immediately. I was sweating, my heart was beating, and I said out loud, don't ever, ever show me that again, ever. I haven't seen it since. But that really terrified me because then I was thinking, was it a mantis being that touched me? You know, da 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 da. I don't know, you know.
So, I hate it all. Now, there's a word for it here. I hate using this word. I don't like this word because it's not really... It's just something somebody came up with. It's not what that is. It was more like a succubus, okay?
Yeah.
And being, and yeah. And if you told it, and it was just messing with you. Okay. They'll come because, like I said, you have, you're psychic, you're able to be contacted by them. You can see things, feel things, and you're empathic. And yeah, so it's, and you did the right thing. You told them to get the heck out of Dodge. That's what you do.
I'm standing up for myself a little bit more lately. That includes poltergeist activity. I seem to be haunting houses or bringing out the worst in the houses sometimes. And
you're the poltergeist. Do you understand that? Okay. You're the one with the ability. You're the one with the ability. All your whole life, you've been making things happen. Do you realize that?
That's correct. That's correct. And that's what I find so fascinating about this. How I learned, by the way, Dolly, about this possible abduction, maybe not, maybe so, was I never believed in, and many people who are watching this right now will probably sit on the sideline with me. I never used to believe in UFOs. I never used to believe in any of that stuff. And it was hard to convince me of any of it until I went to a conference and started talking to this man and telling him some of my abilities and things that I did. And I said to him, well, okay, fine. How do I know if it's me doing it or paranormal? And I stood there and I said, tell me, what is it? You know, because I was giving him all these illustrations. And he looked right back at me. And boy, he shut me up really fast. He said, how do you not know? I said, I've got people like you coming into my office every day. He said, they've been abducted, their memories have been erased, and they've given me the same stories that you're giving me. How do you not know you have not been abducted and your memory has been erased? And I just stood there dumbfounded, and I sat down and didn't say anything more after that. And then that's what turned me around to wondering if some of these things and you know, is the reason why. Because I'll tell you right now, there's not many in my family that are as intuitively empathic than I am. I will tell you that right now. But I cannot really pinpoint exactly either when all this may have started either.
It started with your birth. You were born to be this. I find it interesting. A lot of people don't know what their path is until they actually start walking it. And when we're young, it's all the training period and exploring ourselves and knowing ourselves. And then one day you wake up and you go, I'm going to do this. This is my path. And you're walking it. You're actually walking your path now. You are bringing truth out and you're seeking truth. Mm-hmm. Everything that we all learn cannot be taught to us. We have to teach ourselves. That's the number one thing I want you to always remember. Everything that you learn, you have to truly understand it for yourself because you wear what you know. Okay. You become wise from it and you employ it. Okay. That's a big word. And so you're on that path right now. And there's a lot that you're this close. And it's about to happen. Okay. A lot of it. So don't worry about it. Don't be concerned about not knowing. Just be concerned with learning as much as you can every day. Research, feel it out. You're an empath. You know, you're psychic. You know, work on your psychic ability. Keep doing that. And one day it'll pop and you'll go. You'll know.
Okay? I think I've been told that recently by someone else. And yeah, this is going to be a very interesting journey here. How about you, Preston? What about your journey? Let's ask you about your journey. You know, you've been doing this for a very long time. And my hat is off to you. I do write about you. I talk about you on my shows. I think you're amazing. I'm very appreciative for the books that you've put out, especially the, you know, some of the more fun books, you know, like the drive-in ones and the school kids and the schoolyards and all that. I just love the fact that you're hitting on this in different ways. How have you seen, has your journey changed you a little bit ever since you began kind of delving into this stuff a little bit more?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, for sure. I'm fortunate. You know, I do have 5 brothers and sisters. One has passed away, but from a very young age, I knew what I was going to do. Mm. I was about 9 years old, and I told everyone, I announced, I'm going to be a writer. And everyone's looking at me like, what? I'm like, no, really, I'm going to tell amazing stories. Mm-hmm. And it was shortly after that I discovered science fiction, and I kind of thought that might be it. Turned out to be very much related, because when I started writing about UFOs and, you know, paranormal, the red carpet was rolled out and really amazing coincidences and synchronicities started happening. There was a lot of guidance involved in my journey. And it became very clear to me that this was my life mission. Mm-hmm. And I think there is probably some ET influence with this, because mm-hmm. from a very young age, there were some small indications of contact. And I did have a, as I mentioned earlier, a missing time incident in 1992. And I wrote my first book in 96, not too long after that. And I'm pretty sure what happened, you know, I don't remember this consciously, but I kind of know that I was taken on board and counseled and, what do you want to do? And I'm like, well, this is what I want to do. I want to write books. I want to educate people about the ET presence on our planet. Mm-hmm. What the agenda truly is, which is one of healing and guidance and waking people up, teaching, mm-hmm. and also about life after death, so to speak, or the fact that we are immortal beings. That's a big part of it, because it was at the same time I started doing UFO research that I started having out-of-body experiences, mm. and not just one or two. I became really quite good at it, and still am. I'm putting out another book on that. So I've known what my journey was from the beginning, but that doesn't mean it was always easy, because I was very scientifically minded. I was very stubborn. I wanted to know, and it wasn't good enough for me to believe. There's a huge difference between belief and knowledge. And so that was a hard road for me, finding out that UFOs were real, that you can go out of your body, that there is life after death. My family thought I was nuts. I'm like, "There's UFOs are real. Like, please stop talking about UFOs." Mm-hmm. And I'm like, "Well, I'm going out of my body too." I'm like, "Oh no, Preston's lost his mind." And I'm like, no, for real, for real. And most of them, pretty much all, came around at some point. But yeah, this is definitely something I know I'm meant to do. It's the I'm not happy unless I'm doing it. And I think that's a message for anyone. I see this with other people. If you're unhappy, you're probably not on your life path. Mm-hmm. And when you're doing what you're meant to do, you feel it. You live in joy. You live in synchronicity.
Yeah, I was just telling somebody the other day, oh my God, I found my people. I just, it's kind of a weird thing to say, because, for the longest time, and I think Dolly, you've been, I'm not sure about you, Preston, but Dolly, if I read your biography a little bit, you've had different types of careers and everything, and so have I, and I really believe when I look back now that a lot of this stuff was just building blocks to this new kind of life that I have right now, which is very different than what I used to be, but I really do believe that all that contributed. Preston, would you agree that you had some contributions here to kind of bring you to the point where you're at now?
Oh yeah. I've got a long list of things I've done, everything from, landscaping to bookkeeping to lecturing.
Everything.
Food service. I know. Go on. Yeah.
Oh, I started my very first job, by the way, was selling cemetery plots. So try that one on,
Wow.
Yeah, I know. I hated it. I couldn't do it. Dolly, what kind of things inspired you along the way? And then we're going to jump back in and we're going to talk a little bit more about this book of yours. So you've been a number of things too, but when you were young like that, and you were learning all this stuff, and you were with the ETs and that's a question I have for you. So was it one, I don't really use the word classification, but maybe that is the right word. Was it one classification of ETs that always sought you out, or did you get to meet a variety of ET species along your journey?
Yes. Yeah, they're ethnic, very ethnic. We all come from the human genome. We're all human bipedal. We all have brains. We all eat, sleep, pee, poop, have sex, have babies. We're all the same, okay? Mm-hmm. Genetically, we're so close, we're interbreedable. Yeah. Yes, I've met many different ethnicities of ETs and over the years. I primarily work with the tall grays, the AI, and the Nordic.
Okay.
Types. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, Dolly made an important point, though, which I think deserves underlining, because I've heard this from so many contactees who were told by their contacts, whether they're praying mantis type or rays or human looking or strange humanoids, they almost always get a message, which is, you are us, we are you, we are one. And Dolly said those same darn words to me. And it was like, okay, you know, but Dolly was able to, because her being so conscious and so, you know, easygoing with her experiences and fully understanding them, really was able to connect a lot of the dots for me, fill in the blanks. Mm-hmm. I'm like, yes, I've heard this before. Because I did have, you know, I was wondering who the grays were. Mm-hmm. And I was meditating and trying to figure it out. And I had what is often termed a download, mm-hmm. where I was just, you know, I wasn't dreaming. I was awake, and a vision filled my mind of I saw a perfect human looking male. And I saw another image, and it was slightly less human in that he was bald. And then another image, and the features started to deteriorate a little bit. Mm-hmm. And it went zoom like a deck of cards to a full on gray. And the message was, this was due to genetic deterioration. I guess, I'm not sure that's the best word for
mutation.
It.
Yeah.
Mutation.
But yeah. The message was that grays are human. And this is why we called the book Symmetry, actually. I mean, one of the reasons. I wanted to call it Dolly Among the Stars.
planets.
That was my working title.
Yeah.
He has so many adventures. I mean, it's a true-on adventure. But as I'm, you know, finalizing the book, I'm like, Dolly, you know, have you thought about titles? Here's my idea. Do you have any? She says, yes, I'd really like to call it Symmetry. And I'm like, wow, I love that word. Why? And she explained that this was one of the main messages from the ETs. She has been taken to other planets and seen people there and pine trees and, you know, bulls and pigs and goats and all and birds. There's a symmetry to life throughout the universe. The universe is filled with humans, humanoids. And even energetically speaking, structurally, in this 3D universe and beyond other dimensions, it's very symmetrical in terms of, you know, quantum physics in the micro universe with the atoms and the protons and the neutrons and electrons revolving around each other to solar systems, to galaxies. So yeah, that is a big message from the ETs, and that's why we called the book Symmetry.
Interesting. Dolly, good point there, Preston, because you just brought up another question for me, for Dolly here. So Dolly, how many, do I want to use the word planets, or what do I want to use here? People are always wondering, oh, is there life out there? Is the life just like us? Do they look like us? Do they act like us? Do they have, you know, does it look like what we live with right now on our planet? What are your thoughts about that? And have you seen anything of that sort? What's your comment to that?
In our galaxy alone, there are what we see around us and into the infinity of space, you see many, many galaxies. Within each of those galaxies, and ours in particular I'm going to speak of, we have about 280 million actual planets in our galaxy. Of those 280 million, there's probably about 20,000 habitable, life-giving planets that are all in the catbird seat, you know, the sweet spot. They're all in different varying degrees of evolution. The beings that we are in contact with, they are our progenitors. We are from them. Have advanced in their evolution mightily. In other words, they are so far in advance of us that it's really hard to even explain. Everything they do is through psychic ability. They're interdimensional players now. Okay. Mm-hmm. But we are their children, and we're here to learn as much as we can and evolve to catch up to them. And someday we'll be ready, and they'll open their arms wide and say, hey, welcome home. You got more to learn, you know?
Yeah,
that's what they're hoping for us. We're autonomous beings like they are. We have free will. And as good parents, they watch over us somewhat, but they don't do anything for us. We must do for ourselves. And that means no interference with us in any way, shape, or form. They've given us messages. They've tried to warn us about ourselves. Not anything specific except for broad views like nuclear proliferation. You set off a nuclear device, you're not just hurting people in this dimension. You're hurting it all through the 12, and they're beings you're killing at the same time. They can't die as well as we can. And that's serious stuff. And we need to be made to understand that you can't just kill indiscriminately. Our ability to work with nuclear is very, very Neanderthalish, to be honest, and we're hurting ourselves with it. We're changing our own genome with that stuff. That's bad. Okay. And we need to listen to that advice and take it to heart. We've been on this planet multiple times and multiple generations before here. We actually did live on Mars. Mars had a cataclysmic event and we slipped in the sweet spot, and so we're here now. There is so much for us to know and understand, and we're living in a society that wants to treat us like slaves. Okay, they're using us. We are using each other. Slavery is not just one person's problem. It's everybody's. Okay, everybody has been made a slave and you don't even know it. Okay, we need to walk away from that. We need to stop that. We're autonomous. You're allowed to think and feel as you must. But then there's things that go with that, and that's called responsible, ability to understand why that's important and how to work within that system. ETs taught me the rules of morality, okay? The rules of sensitivity, the rules of respect, in that order, okay? They've taught me that just because we're advancing and we know more and we're able to use our abilities, that we still have to treat each other with love. Absolute love, abject love. You need to understand what that really and truly means. And it's love for everything, right? We need to find that. We need to stop slaughtering each other. We've been doing it for too long. It's so easy for us to act that way. The reason that people have a hard time understanding ET or even seeing them or welcoming them is because they live in abject fear. They live in paranoia. They live in hate, division, all of it. We're almost brought up in the soup of it, and everybody's having a hard time coming out of it. And their number one message to everybody is, you have a pineal gland in your head. It's there for a reason. That's part of who you are and what you are. And that's your telephone call from your real true consciousness, your astral mind, which does run the show, to your physical mind. Your physical mind, your physical body can do and learn and all that, but it doesn't remember everything like your astral mind does, and that you need to be in communion with it. Okay, all the time.
So I have a question for you.
Okay.
All right. So my understanding to this point is that you've had pretty good experiences, or at least I'm presuming that, with the ETs. But have you ever had a negative experience? Are others seeking you out? And have you ever had a negative experience with a species of these ETs, just because, like you hit it earlier, I know my pineal gland is probably screaming out high like a lighthouse. I'm right here. Come find me. I'm yours or whatever. But I'm assuming you probably have a very strong one compared to me.
This is a good stopping point. But to this point, I think that both Preston and Dolly has given all of us a very good sneak peek view into perhaps the agenda of the extraterrestrial world. And keep in mind, and I don't think they would disagree with me on this, that like anyone in life, there are good ETs and bad ETs. There's good doctors, dentists, bad dentists, good everything. And so along that lines, we can't always just presume that what we encounter is a good ET. However, on that note, Preston did bring up a very good point earlier in the show that when people do talk to him about their extraterrestrial experiences and they say that the situation scared them or whatever, and he probes further into why they might have felt that way, the answer is probably more like, well, they visually scared me rather than they had done anything to a person. Now, of course, I did not get into this interview at all regarding implants. That is the one thing I wish I would have asked about during all of this interview, because if the ETs are here and they're putting implants in individuals, I would like to ask Dolly probably next time what her perspective is, and maybe even Preston, since he's been around this for quite a while. I would like to ask the question, why are they putting implants in people? What is the point? Why do some people have implants and why do others do not? So let's head on over to finish this interview on part two. And again, Dolly's going to start this interview off with how she's never met an ET that was not nice to her or that she didn't like. Stay tuned.